Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me. Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. Before we get started, I want to truly thank everyone who has looked into making vacation plans at JohnnyDollarAir.com. It really does help out the show. It's a Priceline.com affiliate, and so you get all the benefits of going to Priceline, where you can either choose from published fares on hotels, rental cars, airline tickets, or you could name your own price. Plus, at no additional cost to you, a portion of your purchase price goes to support the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. So remember, whenever you're making travel plans, visit JohnnyDollarAir.com. All right, well, now we're going to wrap up this week's Johnny Dollar serial. Be sure to listen after the program, Johnny Dollar, when we will bring you another Carter Brown mystery, and I think you will enjoy it. But now it's time for the Cui Bono Matter, Part 5.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Jim Peterson, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, hiya, Sheriff.
I understand you talked with Miss Parker this afternoon.
That's right, I did.
Well, what do you think now?
I think I'm going back to Hartford the first thing in the morning.
So, you finally decided the girl is innocent?
I don't know, Sheriff. And I probably never will know. I'm just finishing up my report now. I'll send you a copy of it.
Well, I'll be mighty interested in seeing it.
On the basis of my investigation, I'm sure the company will pay her claim without question whenever she's ready to file. I'm beat, hands down, and there's no use denying it.
Well, you can't win every time, Mr. Dollar.
It's not that, Sheriff. But this is the first time I've ever had to end a report with a question mark.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Green Pass, Virginia, to the Home Office, Surety Mutual Insurance Limited, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment... The Cui Bono Matter. Expense account, final page. Item 14, 50 cents. Notary fee on a 20-page report. A report that covered everything and told nothing. But it was the best I could do. I had no more leads, no new ideas. The bare facts of the case still stood. Dan Parker had returned unexpectedly from a trip, entered his darkened home late at night, and had been shot to death as a prowler by his daughter, Luann. Amount of insurance... $100,000. Beneficiary, Luann. I checked through a half a dozen theories and been forced to throw out every one of them. And the whole case finally came down to just one simple question. When Luann pulled that trigger and fired down the dark stairway, did she or did she not know that she was shooting at her father? I couldn't answer it, and I didn't believe anyone else would ever be able to. Except, of course, Luann herself. Item 15, $1 even. Transportation out to the Happy Hollow Roadhouse, where the steaks were good, the drinks were good, and a beaten-down guy could kill an evening.
Well, wrap me up and nail me south. Here's that dollar man again.
How's it going, Sammy?
Business gets any worse, I'll open an artery. You here for kicks tonight, or are you going to put the arm on me again?
Let joy reign unsuppressed.
That's the word, man. That's the word. Come on over. I'll let you buy me a drink. You're riding on a swindle sheet.
Or better yet, I'll let you buy me one. You own the joint.
Okay, okay. Set us up, Joe. Make mine a usual fusel.
What do you have, sir?
Scotch on the rocks.
You ever get through to that Parker chick?
Yeah, I talked to her this afternoon.
Well, what do you think, man? Was I right or was I right?
About what?
Is she a cool fool or not?
I don't know, Sammy. She's a tough one to figure.
She's just a tough one, period. Well, here's to the housekeeper's daughter.
Yep.
Whew. Ah, this stuff is murder. I don't know why the customers stand for it. So what comes next, Tex?
I'm going back to Hartford in the morning.
And little Cookie gets her payoff. 100 G's. Man, it's really going for broke.
If she is on the level, it's not enough to pay for the way she'll probably feel for the rest of her life.
Feel? That one? I'm telling you, man, I know that little fluff. She's got a heart about as big and warm as the olive in a martini.
You could be right.
I know I'm right. She's took you, man. She's took you good. Bang, bang, and the little lady wins a prize.
Maybe so.
A big, fat 100 G's. And bad old Papa in the cold, cold ground. Man, she was really shooting for new shoes that night.
Well, if she was, she's got them, Sammy. There's nothing more I can do about it.
So that's life.
What isn't?
You win a little, lose a little, and taxes take the rest. But Parker's got it made, man. Safe and cozy in his little box. No more worries.
Oh, sure. But we can't all be lucky. Sometimes, Well.
Hmm?
Brace yourself, Sammy. It looks like you're rated.
What? Oh, it's the sheriff. Right on time.
On time?
Relax, Max. He's just come to tell the tale and do the deal.
Protection?
Sure. Same setup I had with Parker. And the sheriff says he'll keep Bully Boy Bates in line. How about that, huh?
Well, life goes on, I guess.
Well, I wasn't expecting to run into you out here, Miss Dollar.
I don't imagine.
Finish your report?
Yep. Right down to the last comma, Sheriff. And the last question mark.
Oh, now, I don't reckon there's any question mark. You got to the truth, all right. Just wasn't what you'd expected, that's all.
Maybe so.
You got a minute, Sammy?
Sure thing, pal. Let's go back to the office. Stick around, Dollar. The joint will be jumping.
Fine.
I can hardly wait.
Let's have another one here, bartender.
Coming up.
Sir, would you do me the honor of having a little drink with me?
Well, thanks. I'm having one with you. I've already got it.
Well, so you have. So you have. Well, another little one never hurts, though.
Later, maybe. Thanks, anyway.
Anytime, friend. What line you in?
The insurance record.
Insure? Well, that's all right, I guess. Oh, thank you. Thank you, bartender. Thank you very much. I'm in ladies' ready-to-wear myself.
Must be fascinating.
A wholesale. I work out of Baltimore. Cover 3 whole states. Oh, I got a great little line of merchandise.
I really don't need any.
Oh, the heck with business. Let's live a little, shall we? Mr.
Dollar. Johnny Dollar.
Oh, yes. Well, he's looking at you, Dollar. You know, I always believe in living while I can. Because you never know.
Now, that's a very profound thought.
No, sir, you just never do. Because it can happen to anybody. Just like it did to a fella I met last week. Man right here in this town, too. Fella named Parker.
Parker?
That's right. He was a fine chap. I met him on the train coming out from Richmond. And I was on my way to Roanoke. Oh, we were laughing and we were joking and everything. And that very night he got killed. And I read about it in the paper. So you just don't never know.
Hey, look, tell me something. Are you the man who got off the train with him, talked with him on the platform while the train was standing in the station?
That's right, that's right. He wanted me to meet his daughter. And that's all he talked about. It was his daughter. Oh, he was crazy about that kid.
Well, did he expect her to be there at the station?
Yes, but she wasn't. I guess he got the wires crossed. He tried to phone her, but he didn't have any luck. So I get back on the train. He walks off down the road, and a half hour later, he's dead. I'm telling you, just never know.
On the train, on the way down, what did he say about his daughter?
Oh, you know, the way a guy talks about his kid. He worshipped her. Yes, he did. That's all. He was telling how they were always kidding each other, and they were... Oh, say, here, take a look at this tie I'm wearing.
Yeah, sure, it's a nice tie.
Sure, it's a nice tie. That's what anybody would think, just to look at it. Yeah, it's a nice... Come on. I want to show you something about this tie.
Well, can't you show me without going...
No, you got to go outside, so come on. Mr. Parker gave me this tie. He was wearing one on the train, and I liked it, so he gave me one. He said he had 3 of them. His daughter gave them to him the week before. He got them from some novelty house. So come on.
Well, look, what is it you want to show me about it?
Well, come on. We got to go down there at the corner of the building. Oh, boy, this will knock you out. No, I'm telling you, oh, it's just real crazy.
Yeah, it must be.
Parker never would have given it to me except he had three of them. He figured he could never wear them all, so...
Well, come on, let's see the trick.
All right. Look, it's just a nice necktie, isn't it? That's all. Yeah, that's nothing out of the ordinary. Now, come on around the corner here, out of the light. Oh, boy, this is going to fracture you. Now, look.
Well, I'll be... Good Lord.
How about that, eh? Is it crazy? That daughter of Parker's really must be something, huh?
Yeah, she is.
Can you imagine a kid thinking up an idea like that? Can you? Giving her dad a necktie that glows in the dark.
Good evening, Miss Parker.
Why, Mr. Dollar, what are you doing out here this time of night?
Mind if I come in?
Please do.
Thanks. Oh, I brought your gun back. The sheriff was finished with it.
I never want to see it again.
I know how you feel. I'll put it here on the table. You'd better not leave it there, though. It's loaded.
I wish Sheriff Peterson had kept it.
Oh, it may come in handy sometime. Again.
Mr. Dollar.
I was planning to leave town in the morning, Miss Parker. I'd already made out my report and given you a clean bill of health.
I didn't even realize I was under suspicion. What was I supposed to have done, Mr. Dollar?
Deliberately murdered your father in order to collect $100,000 in life insurance.
You've got a pretty horrible mind, haven't you?
Maybe, but I wouldn't trade it for yours. Haven't you noticed my necktie, Miss Parker? I thought you'd tag it the first thing.
Why should I?
Because it belonged to your father. A special gift from his loving daughter. He gave it to a man he met on the train, and I bought it for $10 this evening. So now you know what happened to the third tie. That's probably been bothering you. Because I imagine you carefully destroyed the other two.
I think you're a little more than slightly insane.
Oh, it was a neat plan. Simple and sweet. You got the idea a month ago when the sheriff caught a prowler over on the south side of town. And suddenly you began to hear prowlers at night. You bought your father a set of ties that glow in the dark. And then you waited. And when he came back from that trip, you got your chance.
You've got quite an imagination.
Oh, it was a great setup. A dark house and him wearing a tie that glowed in the dark. Just like this one, Miss Parker. It was a perfect target. You couldn't miss. It's almost a shame that you were beaten by one unforeseen accident. Your father talked to a stranger and gave him a tie. And that tie is going to hang you.
No, I don't think so, Mr. Dollar.
Turn on those lights.
You were right, you know. It is a perfect target. You were very clever, Mr. Dollar. But not quite clever enough. Or you'd have known... Sheriff!
Yeah, I've been standing out there on the terrace.
You...
No, Luann. You better give me the gun. No use pointing it, honey. It's loaded with blanks. You all right, Miss Dollar?
Yeah, I'm all right, Sheriff. A little sick, that's all. That anybody so beautiful could be so rotten.
You faked it. You tricked up the whole thing just to frame me, you filth. You dirty evil...
That's enough, Luann. No. That's enough. Nobody tricked you except yourself. That's hard for me to believe. Dan and me used to take you fishing with us when you wasn't no higher than that. You was the prettiest little thing I think I'd ever
seen.
Oh,
shut up, you old fool.
Now I got to take you someplace again. Wish I hadn't ever lived to see this day. And I'm mighty glad that Dan ain't here to see it. Come on, honey. We better get started.
Expense account item 16, $148.30. Hotel and incidentals in Green Pass and transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total, $382.65. End of account, end of report. Remarks. When you gave me this assignment, Don, you asked a question, a phrase in Latin. Qui bono? Who benefits? So here's your answer. Nobody. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be another intriguing story for you beginning next Monday night.
Next week, a study in entomology. You know, bugs. And this one's the deadly variety. A firebug. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were D.J. Thompson, Mary Jane Croft, Forrest Lewis, Byron Kane, Russell Thorson, Sam Edwards, Dal McKinnon, and Howard McNear. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, that was one of those very convenient resolutions. In this case, Johnny willing to give up when the one man he needs happens to show up at the same bar Johnny is at with a key piece of evidence. So not my favorite resolution, but the acting throughout was so solid, you know, I can forgive most anything. This is also one of those murder plots where the perpetrator, you know, and this happens in fiction, the perpetrator acts like they are so smart, so intelligent, and they come up with this tool, this very complex tool to capture and secure the victim. That they never seem to consider how much risk there is of something going wrong. I mean, for example, you think with this situation, he mentioned this tie to a complete stranger. You know, certainly mentioned it to folks around town. Again, she seemed to have the people, in the town kind of wrapped around her finger. Or, you know, just, you know, there's the risk of somebody finding out. There's a risk if you're depending on that for your targeting. What if he's, it's a hot night and he just feels like, man, it's hot, and he takes his tie off, you know, outside, you know, for some reason. So you don't get the clear shot. It's one of those things fiction writers can do with their mysteries. I don't care for it because it just doesn't seem real. You know, the basic methods of committing a murder or even staging a murder are going to be the ones that work best. You start throwing in glow-in-the-dark ties. And I remember, you know, I'm almost through all the Nero Wolfe books. And Rex Stout had a period like in the late 30s and early 40s when he could never just have a simple murder. He had to have a Rube Goldberg machine set up for the murder. This kind of feels like that in terms of the resolution. But again, good acting and Latin phraseology, we can overlook a little bit. We've got some listener comments and feedback, but none of it is Johnny Dollar specific, so I'm going to save it all for after the Carter Brown story. And you'll recall we left off a couple weeks ago with High Sky Hoodoo, and this next serial was actually aired the week after High Sky Hoodoo. This serial originally aired in Australia the week of December the 28th, 1957. So here now is Crime for a King.
Carter Brown, Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense. Based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Carter Brown to bring you another of my books. A story called Crime for a King, in which a private detective, Roger King, is embroiled in a batch of bewildering events. Normally a private eye knows all about his assignment, but in this case our hero is in the dark, which naturally enough makes it hard for him to see where he's going. But he can tell it better than I can, so I'll hand over to Roger King.
There was an east wind driving past the car. Behind the wheel of the Dodge, I had to pull up my coat collar. I lit another cigarette and kept my eyes on the road and the car in front of me. The car which contained Miss Elise St. Creese, whom it was my job to follow. About 3/4 of an hour out of town, the road swung round in a bend. When I came round it, I saw the Packard had pulled into the side of the concrete, and a hefty character in chauffeur's uniform waved me to a stop. I wound the window down as he approached.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Miss St. Creese would like to speak to you.
And who is Miss St. Creese?
My dear sir, if you have not been following us for the last 25 miles, it must be my mistake. Just drive on and forget it. But if I am right, then you know who she is. We can forget the pretenses.
Okay, fair enough. I'll have a word with the lady. Good evening.
Hello. You are the private detective, I presume.
A snooper is probably the word you're looking for.
Who do you snoop for?
Around this time of the year, Santa Claus. Now, what are you expecting in your stocking, apart from a luscious limb?
Is wit a necessary accompaniment of your profession?
Oh, not really. We throw it in as an extra.
You have not answered my question.
I have a client who pays good dough for me to trail you. Why should I tell you his name?
Because I am curious. Because I don't like being followed around.
That's too bad.
I don't think I like your attitude. You look like becoming a nuisance.
Oh, you'll get used to me after a while. Hey, let's ride in your car and save the juice in mine, huh? What do you say?
I say that you begin to bore me. Johnny?
Of course.
Hey, what?
Too late, my friend.
Something belonging to the chauffeur, probably his fist, came across my head and I lost interest in the proceedings. When I came round, I was sitting behind the wheel of my car with a headache and without the ignition key. The hulking chauffeur must have tossed it in the bushes. But I'd been caught that way before, and I kept a spare in the glove box. As I drove back in the direction of the city, which contained my apartment, which contained my bed, which would contain me as soon as I could get to it, the only thought in my mind was that my client wouldn't be happy about this. It was about 3 a.m. when I was climbing gratefully into the sheets, when suddenly... Roger King.
So glad you got home safely. Did you walk?
No, I cut a hole in the floorboards of the car and pedaled it home.
It's nice to know that you have not lost that quaint sense of humor.
That smack on the cranium has improved it. Tell that chauffeur of yours that next time we meet, I'll try and do the same thing for him.
Would that be wise? After all, he is so much bigger than you.
How did you get my name and phone number?
I would have thought that you could have deduced that. You were unconscious, weren't you? And in your pocket was your wallet, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. Tell me, is there any point to this conversation, or you just like talking to me?
I don't like talking to you at all, Mr. King, but this once it is necessary. You receive very mild treatment tonight. Next time it could be much, much nastier.
Are you threatening me, my elegant Elise? I can hardly hold the receiver. I'm trembling so badly.
Very funny. This is my last warning, King. Find something else to do, and tell whoever has employed you why. Otherwise, you might wake up one morning and find yourself dead.
Well, well. Now, just what the devil can all that mean? I arose refreshed but resentful. And I had an idea that my client, Mr. Polvy, was going to be resentful, too. It was about 10 o'clock when I presented myself at the offices of Overseas Enterprises Incorporated and asked the pulsating platinum blonde secretary to announce me.
Come in, King. Well, have you anything to report this morning?
In a short word, no.
What do you mean by that?
I followed a car, then I was hailed by a chauffeur. She made it clear she didn't like being followed. The chauffeur made it even clearer by slugging me over the skull. When I came to, they and their car had gone.
So you don't know where she went?
You're right on the ball this morning.
See here, King, I'm not paying you for rudeness. I'm paying you for results. of which I appear to receive none.
Just remember that it's one thing to trail someone who's using the subway, but quite another thing to trail someone who travels in a chauffeur-driven Packard.
That was your problem, and you don't seem to have tackled it very competently. I shall have to find someone who can carry out an assignment without falling down on it.
Does that mean I'm fired?
In a short word, yes.
Well, it doesn't exactly come as a surprise. How about my dough?
I shall have my secretary draw you a check. $150 covers it, I think. A lot of money to pay for nothing.
But you're not paying me for nothing, Polby. You're paying for the privilege of discharging me. There was a restaurant on the ground floor of the building, and so I decided to step in for a cup of coffee. I'd hardly taken my first sip when a familiar, creamy voice fell on my ears.
Do you mind if I share your table?
Well, well, Miss St. Creed's herself. And what are you doing here?
Asking if I can share your table.
Well, it's a free country, or so the rumor goes.
How was Mr. Polby this morning?
Not very happy. He fired me. He thought private eyes should all have steel skulls, and because I hadn't got one, I must be masquerading under false pretenses.
That's too bad, Mr. King.
Oh, stop it. Your sympathy unmans me. In a minute, I'll be weeping salt tears into my good cup of coffee.
I'm glad you didn't have to walk home.
Oh, that's past history. Now, if I was still working for Polby, I should be worried about letting you trail me to his office. But as I am now unemployed, I couldn't care less.
I wonder why Polby had me followed.
Does that wad of dough you've just dropped casually on the table wonder, too?
Yes, you could say it does.
Much as I hate to pass up the chance of some folding money, I don't know. All I know is that Polby hired me to follow you. He didn't tell me who you were or why he wanted tabs kept on you. All he told me was that you were going to that party last night and I was to take it from there. As you know, I didn't take it very far. In fact, my work for Polby might be summed up in three words. Hired, tired, fired.
Well, thank you for being honest anyway. You're not leaving the money lying there, are you?
Honesty is so rare that it's for free.
You misunderstand me. That money is a retainer.
Retainer? For what?
For watching Mr. Polby. I am hiring you to find out as much as you can about him.
Where do I report back to?
I shall call at your office every morning at 10. Any other questions, Mr. King?
Only one. Am I crazy or is everybody else?
That is not what I am paying you to find out. You will start on your assignment immediately, of course.
Well, not till round 5 this afternoon.
Why not at once?
Because the quickest, easiest, and best way to find out about Polby is to trail his platinum blonde secretary.
Oh.
Not to mention the fact that following her will give me something interesting to look at on the way.
Yes. Oh, it's Mr. King.
Hi, beautiful.
What do you want?
Well, since you ask, what are you doing for dinner tonight?
I'm flattered, Mr. King. Don't tell me you came all the way out here just to ask me to dinner.
That's a fact.
And how did you know where I lived?
Simple. I followed you.
Well, in the face of that, what can I say? I have an engagement for dinner tonight, but come in and have a drink anyway, Mr. King.
Just call me Roger, huh? Miss,
Oliver. Marcia Oliver. This way, Roger.
Hey, quite a place you have here, Marcia.
I like it. This is the living room.
Hmm.
Will you have a martini?
You don't have to ask me twice.
Try the lounge. I find it very comfortable.
Thanks. Hey, you're right. It is, and big enough for two.
You're getting a little ahead of yourself, aren't you, Roger? We're only at the drinking stage. Here you are.
Thanks. I drink to a very beautiful girl.
Who am I to call you a liar? Good luck.
You mix a masterly martini.
Well, thank you. And how's the private detecting business?
Booming. In spite of the brush-up I had from your boss this morning.
Oh, that was too bad. He seemed to be in a very bad temper all day.
Tell me, what do Overseas Enterprises Incorporated do for a living?
Import, export. Fine stuff mostly. Jewelry, antiques and so on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, are you ready for another martini?
Thanks. Your version really has a kick in it. I've never had one martini hit me that hard before.
Maybe you've just got a weak head.
Not normally, but right now, I feel something like the morning after two nights before.
Maybe you'd better not have any more.
Maybe I'd better not. That one seems... Just... A Mickey Finn. You gave me a Mickey Martini.
I think it's kind of appropriate. Dope for a dope.
You... Morning, Mr. King. How you feeling?
Awful. Take those panel beaters out of my head.
Hey, in this bed, it's moving.
It's not a bed, Mr. King. It's a bunk.
What?
And the reason it's moving is because we're at sea.
At sea?
That's right, Mr. King.
Hey, who are you?
My name's Harris. I'm the skipper of this yacht.
Shanghaied. I'm being...
taken for a little cruise to the Caribbean.
Hey, now, wait a minute,
I'm
Harris.
I'm afraid we can't, Mr. King. We've been underway now for some hours.
Oh. Well, what's the idea?
Simply that the owner of this yacht feels that 10 days in the Caribbean would do you a lot of good.
Well, who's the owner?
I'm not at liberty to tell you that, I'm afraid.
Hey, but I don't want to spend 10 days in the Caribbean.
I'm sorry about that. But you don't seem to have any choice. Do you?
Welcome back. These stories really seem to be, Carter Brown stories do seem to be getting stronger, as they go on. High Sky Hoodoo, I thought, was good, with a pretty good twist. This one here really starts off with some of the snappiest dialogue we've heard, in the, Carter Brown stories. They've got a pretty good, line of patter here going for the detective. So, I'm enjoying this one. This was a good beginning for Crime for a King, and, we'll continue next week. I do want to let you know that in 4 weeks, we're going to start another, in place of Carter Brown. We will once again pause that to begin, playing an American 15-minute radio series called, Dr. Tim Detective. The reason for that is we have a couple of, lost episodes coming up, pretty quickly. And, so we won't have 4 straight weeks without a lost episode. Ergo, we don't want to have a Carter Brown serial that requires 4 straight weeks. So we'll bring you Dr. Tim Detective. And, then we should get back into the, last three of the Carter Brown series. All right. Now, as promised, off to listener comments and feedback, Laura says, for the Carter Brown series, are the shows all recorded in Australia? Are all the actors in Australia Australian? Did they use American actors when they could find them? In answer to your question, Laura, for the Carter Brown mysteries, they were all recorded in Australia. Whether there were any American actors, I'll give you the honest answer, I do not know. The big challenge with, with American actors, it would be kind of hard to come to Sydney just for radio work. And there's no, American actor I'm familiar with who is famous for, appearing in Australian radio. There were, foreigners people who were not Australians who did appear in Australian radio dramas. Probably the most famous was Bruce Stewart, who played in the definitive, or best known of the original Australian radio serials, as Gregory Kane. And Stewart was actually from New Zealand and would later go on to work in London. But any notable Americans, I don't know. And part of the point of Australian radio and the focus of this was to build was to make sure that Australian culture, wasn't just totally supplanted by imports. So there may have been Americans worked in it, in the program. I don't have enough information to say, but thanks so much for the question, and I hope I at least shared some meanderings. Okay. On to some other listener comments. Elaine emails in and says, please tell me where Adam Graham grew up, and please tell me which states he's lived in. I'm fascinated by his unique American accent. I study regionalisms in language and am anxious to pinpoint his accent. Thank you very kindly, from Elaine. Well, I sent Elaine back a response, and I'll share just in general without having to detail all the specific cities. It would probably be easiest to summarize that I grew up primarily in western Washington State, kind of Everett, Marysville area, and western Montana, particularly northwest part, but also spent quite a few months in Denver, Phoenix, Salem, and then there was one summer I spent down south. I've not yet heard back from her, but I will let you know when I do. And then I have a couple comments regarding Miss Pinkerton Incorporated. Cheryl says more episodes would be great. Love the first episode. And Kathy says love those two together in movies. Too bad there aren't more episodes of this radio series. I definitely agree. And the 1941 radio series, this is, I think, did run the whole summer, so there's always a possibility. And then we finally we have a review on iTunes. This one was on the video theater link. Love the show, would recommend it to anyone. Love following the progression of shows over time. I think that was probably more in regards to the general series, but thanks so much. Actually, that's the first written review we've had on video theater, so I truly do appreciate that. Well, that will do it for today. Join us back here next Monday when we continue on with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Our listener support campaign will be getting into gear. We'll be getting to gear on Sunday as we'll do the first of our Play It Again Adam programs. But Monday we begin with our regular series, and then join us back here on Friday for the next part of A Crime for a King. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.